This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 23rd of August 2014 on Monocle 24.
Covering groundbreaking graphics, perfect packaging and beautiful branding. A print title that's become a classic in its own right. Inspired insights and publishing pronouncements with two eminently qualified magazine men. On The Stack this week, we reveal the brand new issue of influential British design title, I, with the magazine's creators and editors. We'll also review some of the publications that they think are worth writing home about. And we go to Singapore, where budding young travel journalists are doing anything but abandoning print.
So our main objective is also to be a platform for whoever contributes to our magazine, right? So we decided to go with like a very pared-down aesthetic, so that whatever is submitted, it can kind of, you know, shine on its own.
All that and much more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House for this 104th edition, oh yes, of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. It's time to introduce my guests this week. After working on starting the famous design magazine Blueprint in the 80s, art directing The Guardian from 1996 to 2000, as well as working on Italian title Domus and redesigning The New Statesman, Simon Esterson is now art director of graphic design quarterly I magazine. I's detailed and considered approach to covering the graphic design trends past and present has won praise internationally. Simon, welcome back to the programme.
Hello.
It doesn't end there. We're lucky enough to be joined also by John Walters, the editor and co-owner with Simon of I, a musician and record producer before moving into publishing with Unknown Public in the 1990s. Outside I, Walters has written for The Guardian, Port Boat, London Jazz, and is currently writing a book about Alan Kitching, amongst other things. A polymath, I sense. John, welcome to The Stack.
Very nice to be here again.
It's great to have you both with us. I mean, let's maybe start with I. Why not? It seems sensible, doesn't it? And I was looking before at the, well, we were talking actually before we came on air about Tunnock's tea cakes, the ubiquitous Tunnock's. That was the food issue. Tell us a little bit about this new issue, John, first up. Not a sort of an explicit issue like the sort of food special, but there's kind of themes that run through.
Yes, we don't like to make every issue a themed issue. We do a typography issue quite regularly, and the food issue that you just mentioned with the Tunnock's tea cake on the front was quite different in its approach, absolutely packed with stuff about food. So the new one covers publishing, but it covers news design for TV, covers one of the great graphic designers of Europe, or the world for that matter, Irma Boom, and her book design. And we've got a big feature about a magazine which I suspect a lot of our readers won't know very much about.
Mm. Tell us more. Perhaps, Simon, you can fill us in then.
The feature's about Pegasus, which is a magazine that Mobil produced. And in some ways, it was one of the very early corporate magazines. And in spite of being an American-based company, they came to work with Derek Birdsall, incredibly famous English graphic designer. And the interesting thing is it doesn't look or read like a corporate magazine. I think there's probably supposed to be one feature in issue about the oil and the oil industry, but it was really supposed to be a kind of calling card for the company, and it had an amazing blue chip circulation. And Birdsall and his team were kind of allowed to do what they wanted to do, and it was a mixture of good writing and photography and illustration.
It's really very adventurous, and Greg Vitello, who came in as editor after the first few issues, could really call on anyone he wanted and interview anyone he wanted. There's interviews with Marshall McLuhan and Buckminster Fuller and so on. And so you get this very kind of free-spirited coverage of cultural matters in the 70s and early 80s and visual essays. You know, they use great photographers as well as illustrators. And they would give illustrators such as Ron Sanford and Michael Foreman a lot of leeway to cover things. Occasionally it would be an oil platform, which is what you see on the inside back cover of the new Eye. It's Ron Sanford did this incredibly detailed line drawing of the Barrel A oil platform, but a lot of the time it wasn't anything to do with oil at all. And at one point, Derek referred to it as a kind of elegant bribe. You know, it was the beginning of corporate responsibility, when that was the reason you might do sponsor a film series or classical concerts. And I think Derek argued that actually producing a magazine was a very good way to kind of make friends in high places. You know, it could go straight to their door. If it's a beautiful magazine, they'll want to put it on their coffee table and read it and share it with their
friends.
Absolutely.
And you've got some terrific images on your lovely gloss spreads that you've got in here. I like this Studs Terkel one, cigar in hand. you wouldn't see a spread like that these days. And interestingly, you're talking there about TV as well, news and sort of news branding. And that's quite an interesting marketplace. Obviously, we often talk on Stack about the rise of digital and apps and how it's changing the entire landscape. There's a lot of people still committed to doing the traditional media and doing it very well. What did you sort of learn, do you think, about this? Was a RTL
this
rebrand.
This is the piece about the reconceptualizing of RTL. And I guess what's interesting from our point of view is that Mark Porter, famous as a newspaper designer, beginning to work on screen and work digitally. And it's a very much a sort of team thing with one group of people doing the classic kind of idents at the front, although under the art direction of Mark and Dylan. And then there's an awful lot of on-screen graphics. And, they reconceptualized how those are done. And it went right through to the studio and the structure of the layout of the studio. So it's a very, it's a big range of things they've influenced at RTL.
And there's one very simple, if you like, high concept idea, which is everything is within a frame. And so the idea of the frame that you might have on your tablet or on your smartphone or on your TV screen, if you still watch TV on a regular TV. That's continued right across everything from the set design to the web design to the way it looks on TV. And of course, that's technologically quite complicated because TV is still using quite old school technology, whereas website has to, the website has to be responsive and so on. But and
it's also very clean. What they've done is they've abolished the spinning globes. They've abolished things having shadows, things whizzing across the screen. The on-screen presentation anyway matches the smartphone presentation and the iPad.
It's very explicit in the piece highlighting the day-to-day, the Chris Morris satirical show, and they had all these overblown graphics. And of course, a number of news outlets, approached them afterwards.
Like
and they approached them afterwards to find out where they'd got it done because they thought, wow, this is really cutting edge, slightly, again, missing the point, as usually with Chris Morris's brilliant work. your piece sort of concludes that maybe the day-to-day has finally been overtaken.
Later rest,
a job well done, I guess, is the verdict then on the
I think a fascinating project, yeah.
Fantastic. What next in I country then? I don't know how far ahead you want to go. I don't want you to reveal all of your trade secrets.
Well,
of course,
we can tell you exclusively that we're working on two issues. we have another typographic special issue coming up. But before that, we have an issue which I think is going to be a little more contemporary than this one, isn't it? If we play our cards right.
It's always a balance with a magazine about how much kind of historical stuff like Pegasus do you do, and how much contemporary stuff do you show? And we've always got lots of both. And we quite like the sort of exchange between the two, that suddenly you perhaps show an illustrator from the 1960s and, there are things there that of interest now and excite you now.
Well, a lot of people have responded to the Pegasus article saying how contemporary those spreads and covers look now. And of course, it's always nice to have a certain element of surprise. There's a lot of historical subjects which are really worth covering, but there are tumblers and blogs all over with all those images. We've seen them so many times. So it's quite hard sometimes to find a new subject that's not yet easily Googleable.
Well, no, it's interesting, and you both make that point about these old favourites, these old classics that have this extraordinary contemporary look. And I remember, Simon, when we talked before, you sort of raided your, incredible
garage
collection. Or garage, as it is.
Simon's legendary garage.
But it is, yes. I mean, it was amazing. It's so striking. You think these things are so fresh. There's such dynamism. And then you look at the dates and they're in the early 60s or, early 70s. It's pretty extraordinary. What is it? Is it the typography? Is it the graphics? What is it that enables those pages to retain a contemporary look 60 years later, 50, 60 years later? I mean, it's an extraordinary achievement, if nothing else.
Well, lots of the magazines from that period were released from some of the constraints they didn't have yet, the constraints we have now about number of pages, page size, advertising positions, the feeling that lots of magazine pages should be really busy. That dreaded phrase, entry points, you know, that it's not just the text, it's the caption, it's the box, it's the little bullet sitting on the box. I mean, you do see that's a very strong tradition of magazine design, making very rich pages. But we're making a very beautiful, simple, clean page is also an exciting thing. And if you're coming from a world of very busy magazine pages, actually a beautifully clean page is, you know, rather exciting and rather refreshing. I think the sort of three things about Pegasus were it's square. And actually, there are not many square magazines, which there are all sorts of functional reasons. But, you know, again, because it was just for mobile and there's no advertising. So they could, you know, to a certain extent, invent the magazine they wanted to invent, which is it's always a good position to be in.
Absolutely. That's Simon Esterson. John Waters is here as well with me in studio. And up next on the stack, we'll be heading to Singapore, and then we'll be delving back into our stacks of magazines. So don't go away.
Monocle 24 is your 24-hour-a-day international radio service. Based in the heart of London, with contributions from our bureau in Hong Kong, Tokyo, New York, Toronto and Zurich, and reporters in more than 30 countries, we broadcast a mix of news, discussion, features, reportage, reviews, music and more. From retail to travel, food to urbanism, business to film, Monocle 24 has it covered.
One of the things that I would like to allude to, which is very much the kind of thing that you're doing here, is you're having this kind of discussion. But the discussion that needs to take place, where the forward thinking needs to come from, is from the brains trusts and the think tanks, and they're not doing it.
To call it an international conference, that's difficult in itself. The really difficult thing is then to start to implement the conclusions.
I was actually the last correspondent to send dispatches by carrier pigeon. It's not something I'm proud of.
There are two kinds of games. The games that uses the city, and the other kind is the city that uses the games.
Plus, our carefully curated playlist is the soundtrack to your day, stretching from Stockholm to Sydney, Brooklyn to Bogota.
It was like entering the gates of heaven.
You can hear us live at monocle.com, catch up with anything you may have missed on our time shift player, download our bespoke app for your smartphone, and hear it all on iTunes.
I like the sense that you just have no idea where it's going to go.
Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. And now to Southeast Asia. As their country is essentially comprised of one small island, Singapore's citizens are well accustomed to venturing beyond their borders to seek new inspiration. Afterglobe is a new biannual art and literary publication capturing the travel stories of Singaporeans in both text and pictures. Their pilot issue is a luscious tome of over 160 pages, taking readers to an eclectic range of destinations from Japan to Turkey to the US. Monocle's resident Singaporean Jason Lee spoke to executive editor Rachel Ng.
We are kind of diverse in the kind of works we accept. So there's definitely prose, there are photographs, like photo essays, but there are also illustrations, poems, short stories, all these things that go into our first issue.
And how do you go about looking for your writers? Is it an open call or...?
So we have an open call. What we do for each issue is that we have a theme around which we curate and like select the pieces and also edit. So our main objective is also to be a platform for whoever contributes to our magazine, right? So we decided to go with like a very pared down aesthetic so that whatever is submitted, it can kind of, you know, shine on its own. That's how like the layout kind of is. For the cover, we decided to choose something that was very Singaporean, but
and very common to Singaporeans' childhood. I grew up here in Singapore and I know what these are. Can you tell me what they are?
Yeah, so they are actually eraser rectangles that have flags from different countries printed on them. And we used to play a lot of games with them when we were young.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do something that was like really close to our Singaporean heritage, but also convey like a travel element.
That was Monocle's Jason Lee speaking to the creator of Afterglobe magazine, Rachel Ng, in a rather loud Singapore. I surprised my guests with a copy of Afterglobe. I'd like to get a spot on the spot reaction. Simon, perhaps I'll start with you. What do you make of Afterglobe after a quick browse?
Well, it's always great to see the first issue of any magazine. I just think, you know, for those of us who have worked on magazines realise how significant just getting that first issue back from the printers is. I think it looks good. It's got that kind of travel journal feel about it. So, it's just wide A4 size, but actually the layouts are very calm and, you know, the headlines are centred and the pictures are used in a very sort of clear way. The illustration's different. I mean, that's, you know, it's good to see some strong illustration stories standing up for themselves rather than just being decoration or supporting a piece of writing. It looks good.
Good stuff. John, what's your view? I always like to see what the, you know, what does instinct tell you about that one?
My instinct is that they know what they're doing, actually. I think that, you know, it's obviously there's a sort of, they've reached a kind of escape velocity. Enough people doing interesting things, different parts of the world. I was impressed by the illustrations by Shuxian Lee. They just run full bleed with a little credit at the end, so they just speak for themselves. There's some quite atmospheric and not really overwhelming photography, but photography that kind of puts you in a particular mood. And a magazine is a great way of putting a lot of quite disparate things and different kinds of people together in one place in a way that, if you did it in a book, you'd have to make some sort of overarching claim for it. In a magazine, it can just sit there and live and make friends. Just
occupy the space happily on its own.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, that's the first magazine that we looked at. Let's delve into the stacks that you've brought with you. Perhaps, Simon, do you want to get the ball rolling? Where should we begin today?
We've brought Riposte. So this is issue 2 of Riposte. It's got a little tiny subheading that says, a smart magazine for women, but actually, I just think it's a really good magazine. And the design is incredibly confident, sort of uses mixed papers, glossy paper, matte paper, full page photographs, but it's just extremely measured. There's little bits on different sizes. It feels really good. And well, the wonders of radio mean I should tell you that it doesn't have a photograph on the cover.
Well, this is what I was going to say. The key word there you said was about being confident. And that's a magazine that's confident in its
creative
vision.
This is a magazine. It just has green on white for the cover and the title piece, Riposte. And then underneath, in very elegant sans serif, a centered listing of what's inside. And I think you have to have real confidence to do that.
The cover star is on the back cover. Deborah Sussman is
on the back. And issue 1 was very good. And I think this is kind of even better. The things I've read, I've really enjoyed. John, what did you think?
Yeah, I feel the second issue is, it really avoids cliche. I haven't read everything in it, but what I've read so far, there's a piece about the music industry and so on. And there's a long piece about publishing in the Arab world, with women who are making headway in the Arab world. I think that's a really...
Very, very strong stuff.
Really well-researched and well-written, and the art direction is quiet but confident. In fact, it has, like Derek Birdsall said about Pegasus, doesn't it? You know, if you get the typography right...
I mean, we had... Daniel Pender, who's the editor, came in onto the stack, actually, and we talked a little bit about that idea of editorial independence, being confident in your sort of message. Do you think there is a deficit? I mean, it's great to see magazines where you're clearly looking at a confident editor who's got a very clear vision of what they want to do. Do you think there's a deficiency, a lack of editors who, either because they don't have necessarily the creative spark, or maybe they don't have the freedom because of business models or such like, to be that bold, to be that confident?
I think good editors can spring from almost anywhere, but I think we have a very different ecology at the moment, the way that people can learn to become editors and learn to become art directors. And thankfully, people still do it. But, you know, it's a very different world, the one that Simon and I learned how to trade within.
I think lots of people in the kind of indie publishing world, they're sort of publishers and entrepreneurs almost before they're editors or art directors. You know, the important thing is to get it out there. And so some of the, you know, received wisdom of how you make a magazine may not be very interesting to them. We should just say with Riposte that it's designed by Shaz Madani, and I think it's really good.
So thumbs up for Riposte. That's good. That's a good. That's a good positive note on which to.
I say we haven't brought any negative.
Well, this is great. This is going to be the most upbeat episode of the stack ever. Let's continue on. John, perhaps do you want to sort of lead us on? Where would you like to take us next?
Well, there's a new magazine called Print Isn't Dead, which is the brainchild of Mark Roy Smith, who's the person behind People of Print. And Mark Roy is a good example of what Simon's just talking about. He's really an entrepreneur. And he has a website, which is a great resource for all things to do with print. I mean, every aspect of print, from screen printing to litho to digital printing, that's kind of his business. That's his shtick. And he's wanted to launch a print magazine for a while, did a Kickstarter campaign, had several setbacks, including Butler and Tanner, the printer that he was originally going to print it, went into receivership round about, I think, the same week that he was due to go on press.
Unfortunate irony.
So
of the process,
there was a, well, yes, exactly, with a title like Print Isn't Dead. But in fact, he found another printer in Pure Print, same people who print iMagazine, in fact. And this first issue really brings together, it's like a big listing. It's lots of different people, New North Press, screen printers, people doing letterpress.
People doing risograph.
Right, yes, exactly. So it's just lots and lots of people. You only have to flick through there to see that print isn't there. There's lots of people actually doing it, really quite passionate about it.
And it's sort of used four colour and then a very strong sort of fluorescent orange. The whole thing has a rather wonderful smell of print about it.
I just wonder, Simon, it's interesting, you know, looking at something that's, you know, clearly going to appeal to your sort of print aficionados. It's a tricky creative challenge, I guess, because people are going to expect to be impressed. Maybe some of them are going to expect to be challenged. So you're walking a fairly sort of fine line between being too conservative, you know, sort of preaching to the converted, but I think a job well done.
I think it's really bold and very contemporary. You know, it doesn't feel like a conventional magazine, feels like something slightly different, which I think is good.
Well, of course, we're seeing quite a lot of new magazines coming through Kickstarter campaigns, Indiegogo campaigns. So you really don't have to play by the rules. You know, I mean, the rules are being made up and, you know, thrown apart all the time, because if you have a Kickstarter behind you, you've already got your readers. And you have to come up with something that they'll be happy with if you're going to do a second one. But I think Mark Roy's probably done that. We're doing an event in London, a Type Tuesday event, 2nd of September. And Mark Roy's going to be one of the panellists. We're having a whole sort of debate and discussion about the future of printing.
Terrific. Okay, well, but people must mark their cards for that one. Time is relatively short, so should we whiz through a couple more? Simon, where should we turn next?
Well, maybe in complete contrast is the AA Files, the Architectural Association Files, which is designed by John Morgan. And it is presented in a beautiful sort of academic journal style. It's oversized magazine, but very careful typography, wonderful selection of arcane images. And although it's published by the Architectural Association, it covers everything from, you know, Corbusier and English modernism right through to an interview with the designer Richard Hollis about his book design. So it's incredibly eclectic in its taste.
And it has a really sort of pleasingly sort of austere quality to it.
Well, the cover, the back and front cover, are solid blue with just the Architectural Association monogram in the issue number at the bottom. So
that's terrific. That's the kind of spread that I can work with. Like a small sectional perspective of the Oita Prefectural Library from 1966.
Exactly. That's the image you've been waiting to see.
Exactly. Wonderful stuff. And John, what do you think about that? It's good. These things have their place, don't they? Something a bit more serious.
Yes, well, I'm a fan because I interviewed John Morgan for iMagazine a few issues ago, and I think he's a very confident and interesting designer for readers. I mean, I really get magazines for the reading. If it's well designed, it's a kind of plus. And it's full of really interesting articles. They don't mind letting the articles run. They have lots of footnotes because it's that kind of journal. And I think it's John's solution as a kind of piece of editorial design that can be repeated is entirely appropriate for the subject matter.
So you can sit down on your Corbusier armchair and have a good long
read.
I can't quite
live up to that, I'm afraid. I brought along the Believer, which is part of the McSweeney's stable. And the thing that's unusual about, I mean, I don't get the Believer all the time, but I often buy the music issue or the film issue special. And I think the last time I bought Believer music issue. It had a CD. This one is a sign of the times. It has a 7-inch vinyl single.
That's what we're talking about.
A vinyl EP that comes with the was shrink-wrapped with the magazine. But the Believer, although it does actually feature quite a lot of illustration and line drawing, for me, it's one for music geeks. It's some for people who want to have a good long read about quite arcane elements of the music business and musicians. And I often find I don't agree with what they say at all, but I just enjoy writers having a little bit of space to argue through quite obscure points. And it has a thing which is quite unusual of micro interviews, where they're almost like a TV or radio program. They have little spots of little fragments of an interview with a guitar maker that are spotted throughout the issue. And I think that's quite a...
It's clever. Well, and it's a nice riposte, if you like, to people who say, well, you know, digital's so much better. You can have these bite-sized elements. Magazines can do that with just as much creativity and skill if they want to. What I like about that, it might be the note upon which we unfortunately have to end. It clearly proves that print is not dead, and vinyl neither. It's a twin triumph. So an even more upbeat note on which to end this week's edition of The Stack. Simon Esterson and John Walters from I, thank you both very much indeed for coming to see us.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
And that does indeed bring us to the end of this edition 104 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks to my guests, Simon Esterson and John Walters in particular. And also to my producer, David Pleasant, and studio manager, Claire Urban. Comments and queries are welcome, info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us again at the very same time next Saturday. You can always listen again if you're missing us via monocle.com or iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, until next time, that is all. It's goodbye from me.